Hello and welcome to Stock Club. You join with me, Ed.
And me, Jack.
And apologies, first of all, for missing last week. It's bad form of us, but we will endeavour to do it every week from here on forth. Just think I've got too much rest, but oh well. Anyway, Jack, this week I thought we'd talk about the next 6 months and what we think is going to happen in the next 6 months. I've certainly been looking at a few trends. So the more I look at things, the more I'm confused by things, trying to predict the future. Yeah, so what do you think to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably involve some talk about the last 6 months, right?
Yeah, definitely. Look back and then see how that looks to look forward.
But it's going to be, it's tough to kind of, and I think in the grand scheme of things, it's hard to predict stuff or to, you know, no one can predict the future. But I think given the last sort of 12, 18 months, things are just very uncertain, full stop. So I think it's probably harder than ever to kind of predict in a sense what things might do and where the stock market might go.
Yeah, so it's been a very turbulent 18 months, as you said, and we know why that is. And I'd like to think that as we head into more certain times, the markets will start behaving a bit more, in inverted commas, normally, and that they won't be quite so volatile, hopefully. And the way of volatility, you can make a lot of money. Equally, it's not really the most assuring of times, is it?
Yeah.
You buy a stock and literally it's almost like a punt as to whether it's going up or down, which, you know, going back to a couple of pods ago about mental health and stuff, that's, it's not good for that.
No. I think, yeah, volatility, like that can either go two ways, can't it? You can either view that as an opportunity if you get in at the right time and you exit at the right time, because it gives you the opportunity to kind of maybe make a large spread on stuff, but it's not the for the investor that's looking for, you know, generous income or steady gains over a long period of time. Volatility isn't ideal.
No. Anyway, so I thought we'd start with, what did you, how did this week go for you? Start with that and go from there.
So I think the last week pretty much sums up the last 6 months of behaviour for me in terms of the stock market. So it's quite a nice segue into that. It's just been up and down. I'm pretty much back where I was this time last week. In the middle, there was a dip. There was also a peak. It's just been going up and down. And I think that, like I said, it reflects the attitude and the behaviour of the stock market over the last 6 months. And that then goes back to uncertainty. You know, things still aren't crystal clear about what's happening. The UK's made really good progress, but there's still other kind of hints that it's not 100% disappeared globally. And so, yeah, I think that's having a knock-on effect on investments and investment strategies from people.
Yeah, and for me, I'm quite heavily into mining and commodities and stuff, and it's the certainly the beginning of this week has been quite strong for those, and there's been some very good news coming from some large companies. And I think you were saying about there's talk of a real commodity boom in the next few years, and the way inflation's going and stuff.
Yeah, there are several reasons for potentially a commodity super cycle, but that's what I've been hearing. And I think they started to talk about that when the markets crashed last year, because, you know, when sort of equities and stuff like that isn't worth much, people, that was, you know, traditionally that's when you'd go and buy gold and stuff like that. And I think that's why Bitcoin rose to an extent. So, yeah, things like commodities and commodity heavy companies, either they mine them or they might have, you know, investments in them, kind of like Glencore that has both. I think that kind of sector has, like you say, it's seen strong growth, and I think it's heading in the right direction. Also, oil. Is something that personally I've seen a bounce this week. BP Shell announcing, you know, dividends again and strong performance off the back of the first quarter of this year. So yeah, there's signs of that, you know, of positivity out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also that there seems to be a little bit more life in things like the events businesses and the service industry as well. I've got some shares in companies like Hive and SSP, that's the one. And SSP do, we've talked about in the pod before, they do like a catering at things like airports and stuff. But they've been they've been behaving much better this week. And hopefully there's some nice growth we had there.
Have they?
Well, for me, it's still down overall, but that's because I got in at a level that I thought was still way below where it's going to go to. I think it's going to rise well up. But obviously, you can't always pick the bottom. But for me, obviously, this week, it's gone up a bit, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, looking ahead to... So let's get to the topic. We were looking ahead to the next 6 months. I've been sort of... So to look ahead, I thought we'd look back first and just look at things that have done probably a bit too well over the last 6 months and possibly will be reined back in. And I was looking particularly at a couple of companies that are heavily involved in the British and European betting industry, actually. These companies are Flutter Entertainment and Entain. Now, Flutter, you've probably never heard of, but I guarantee you that you've heard of the companies that they run under their umbrella. So Flutter have got Paddy Power, Betfair, Adrabet, which is a big thing in on the continent. They've also got a big Australian division and a big US division. They've soared through the roof, as have Entain. And Entain, again, you've probably never heard of, but I guarantee you've heard of the companies they're involved with. They have got Coral, Crystal Bet, Eurobet, Ladbrokes. They've also got all like the online casinos like Foxy Bingo, Gala Bingo, Party Poker, Party Casino. So they're the two big companies, but they have gone astronomical in the last year compared to the last 5 years worth of growth. And I just think that obviously where people haven't been able to get to sporting things, they haven't had their day out on the Saturday. They decided to have a bit of a day in. And I think going having a quick bet on something has obviously been a bit of respite to that. And I think over the next 6 months that kind of industry is going to have a bit of a come off. So you know, if you can stick some shorts on something, I think those two companies were a pretty good bet on those two. I just think they've just grown too much in the last 6 months or 2 years.
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, there is the argument that given the fact that things are going to be opening up, more tournaments will be happening. You've got the Euros coming up in the summer, you know, and fans will be going back to grounds and stuff like that. If A, will that cause people to bet more on sports and big events and things like that? And B, will people's habits continue?
Yeah, you know, they've made a habit of betting. It's literally gambling is addictive, isn't it?
So yeah, maybe. So you might think people, you know, that never did it, now they do it, and they've, you know, maybe they've made a little bit here and there, maybe they've lost some, and they're, you know, they're sort of going, oh, well, I don't mind a punt at £5 a week on the football. Is that a pattern that will stay? So, I mean, I think you give all the right reasons for a come-off, but I wouldn't suggest you're going to see a huge drop-off, and I'd maybe wait until after the Euros, because I think that's a huge event, especially from the UK's perspective.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know,
it's mainly going to be based in the UK anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, so, exactly. And it'll be something. You know, I'm not a betting man. I never have been, but the Grand National is something I always stick a bit of money on. And the Euros will be the same. You know, I'll probably put a fiver on England to win. I will lose that fiver, but it's the same principle, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, betting on England never a good thing.
No, no. I don't. This is what I mean. I don't expect to get anything back. I'm fully aware I'm going to lose it.
I think we're more likely to get a return on our Hurricane investment than England winning anything. But yeah,
rest in peace.
Yeah, so I think we mentioned it in some of the earlier pods. We took a punt on a company called Hurricane. I still haven't sold up. You haven't sold up, have you?
No.
Sold up. So we put
I'm going to be there until the end.
We put in just over 100 quid each, I think, into this company called Hurricane. And they used to trade for about 40 pence a share at one time, but they're now right down. They were down at like 2.5p when we bought. This week they came off 75%. They're down, well down in the below a penny market. So
they're currently sat at 80p.
No, 0.8p.
0.8p.
If it was 80p, I'd be laughing.
Oh yeah, if it was 80p, we'd be going to Vegas.
But yeah, I mean, like, if they return to where they were at 40 pence, anyway, they had a massive come off. We lost pretty much all our money, but it's only 100 quid. And if they go bust, it's our foot. We can say it's the first company that we backed that's gone bust. If they moon, then we're laughing. We're going to Vegas and we'll see you all there. But
I'm semi tempted to put in another 50 quid at this price.
Why? Because if you're in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, because I just think if it goes back to where we bought it, if it goes from 0.8 to back up to 3p, you know, that's 82%.
More than that.
Well,
that's 350%.
But we're down. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I just feel like,
as we know, Jack and maths do not go together, despite him, he is an accountant.
No, I mean, it just takes me a little while to get my head around things.
And a calculator.
Yeah.
anyway, so going back to topic.
But actually, I was about to say, this probably moves me on to. So you've got your views on Flutter and Entain. I've got my views on oil. I think we're going to see a resurgence of the oil sector, not just to where it was kind of previous to COVID, but beyond. And we're going to see a bit of like growth, a real, almost like an oil super cycle in a sense. I think the fact that, you know, like BP is an example, they've cut loads of debt. They've had to restructure. They've had to kind of look at green energy really hard, all of the sector in general, and look at their investments long term. And I think with opening up and more travel and stuff like that, and everything, that it just, the environment there is for growth. I don't know what you think, but that.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, still pretty, as far as I'm concerned, on the floor. So it's obviously BP's got 50% in the last 6 months or 8 months. But it's still very, very cheap. So, yeah, I totally agree with you there. Yeah,
you know, I think the fact that BP cut their debt, you know, two or three years early. You know, there was, you know, Shell have raised their dividends. They've everything that they're saying, it's all about green energy. BP have been very quiet actually on green energy for the past sort of 2, 3, 5 years. But they, you know, in their annual report, they were saying a lot about it. I think we're going to see a real resurgence. And yeah, if you look at the price now and then you look maybe 2 years back to where BP was sort of sitting around the 500p mark, you would say it's criminally undervalued at the moment. So plus it's a strong performer on the dividend. So I think that's a sort of a good bet. And it also gives me a bit of comfort from an ESG perspective, because oil, you know, you think, is it a good thing to invest in from like an ethical perspective? But the fact they're always talking about green energy and movement towards it gives me a bit of comfort.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other companies I've been looking at. I've been looking at sort of like some tech companies. So I've been looking at companies like 3i, basically just looking to see like what they're up to and things. And particularly in the case of 3i, I just thought, well, they were on to pretty good growth over the last 5 years, and they were hit massively by COVID, but they sort of returned back to where they were pre-COVID now, if anything, slightly above. But they're more sort of investing in sort of capital returns and cash flow and income. So a bit more sort of like, they don't have a physical product, they're more just investments and stuff like that. I only did look at some technology companies as well. So I did label them as a technology company when they're not a technology company, but they're investment companies. But I say that they invest in things like that, and it just, the way, when we come back to the world of work, it's how are these companies that have basically dealt in man management type thing, sort of like with people physically working at desks and stuff, and are we going to go back to that kind of thing, and how are they going to adapt if not? And just looking at that, and to be honest, it's quite interesting actually seeing how some companies have been so volatile recently, because people don't know what's going to happen with them. So it's just definitely have a look. There is some bargains to be had, but I think, so have a look at some technology companies and companies that have a lot of people that work in on desks normally, and see how they're going to go, because some might get it right and some might get it wrong. But just have a look at that, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the last, well, one area, another area that I might, I say is the travel industry. I mean, it's just kind of obvious, right? And it's been the one that was the hardest to fall and the one that's going to take the longest to come back. And yeah, it's the one that is still not back. You look at the main companies across the sector, like IAG and EasyJet and all that kind of stuff. TUI, I don't think as a sector they're back to their pre-COVID levels. I could be wrong.
No, definitely not. I mean, TUI, for instance, they turned around. They managed to do some get some people out to holidays, obviously last year, and they did stuff. Like they said to the hoteliers and around the Med and stuff, where they sent these people. They said, "Oh, you know, thanks for putting these people up, but we won't pay you till next Easter." And it got to Easter just gone, and they said, "Oh, we're gonna have to extend it by a couple of months." So it's like they might have been making some good money recently, but it's only because they've not been paying their hoteliers. So definitely have a look at those companies, because I think there's going to be some winners and losers there, and there's going to be ones that handle the situation better than others. And
yeah,
I say TUI, with the buying power they have, they can pretty much dictate whatever they like to the hoteliers and make of it what you will. In terms of business, it's very good, because but it's just whether they annoy a lot of people. But I think they're so big, they'll get over that kind of thing.
Yeah. But I think, so my point is that they've had to, every single company has had to restructure, and they've had to look at their operating model and go, what the hell can we cut, you know, to save money? I think TUI's done, I remember reading something where TUI had basically done very good restructuring. British Airways and IAG have taken on a shed load of debt. So I don't know whether that's the right thing to do, because they borrowed basically to get themselves through the pandemic. Yeah, but
British Airways decided to hang on to most of their staff, didn't they?
Exactly. But I think that beyond this, the right companies could be more streamlined. They could be more profitable. Obviously, when things open up, people are going to go on holiday. It's what everyone's kind of waiting for. And we will see a surge in, you know, the stock prices of these companies reflected in the activity and the positive profits and stuff like that. So I think also the way that, you know, people have changed their living, and, you know, myself personally, I used to be office based. Now I'm kind of a hybrid model, or I will be, you know, going forwards. I would now look to it and go, right, I can go on holiday for a week. I could take 3 days off holiday and work one day at the hotel to save myself that day's holiday, and extend my holiday, and so I'm, you know, taking more holiday than I would have done ever, because I can remotely work in Portugal or France or Spain. So I think that will also increase the amount of travel that people do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because I live in an area where it's far away from the city, and the amount of people that have sort of moved away to here and stuff, you know, they're now saying, well, I work in London, but I live here and I'm going to work remotely, you know, because there's no need to live in London anymore either. So, you know, yeah, and definitely people that can't afford to move, maybe. You say you're going to, you know, all you have to be is on your laptop. Well, you can be on a laptop in a cafe in the south of France. Why not?
I mean, exactly.
You can be anywhere in the world, you know. So, I totally agree with that. I think, yeah, there might be some sort of different options on travel, actually, like that, if you're going to say that, you know, if you be sort of different packages and probably open up a whole new sector. So,
exactly. Yeah. And I just think that, you know, the old fashioned way of living is going to be, obviously, is being replaced by this modern remote style of life. I think the travel industry are sort of quite well prepared to benefit from that. So, I think you'll see some growth there. But I'll go back to the volatility point. I think it's going to be volatile.
It's going to be a slow grower, that's for sure. But, you know, if you're looking to build up a portfolio, you know, it's probably a good thing to sort of, because there's still a lot of growth to be had there. There isn't the dividend growth on stuff like that. A lot of those companies won't pay a dividend, and if they do, they won't be a very high dividend. But in terms of a medium term growth, maybe 3 to 5 years, I think that's not a bad bet.
Yeah.
Cool. I've been looking at the packaging industry, actually, in a company called Mondi, and they do things like your cardboard boxes, paper, consumer packaging, And they've done reasonably well actually over the last year, as you can imagine. It's been quite volatile, but they've tracked up, and I think that's only really continued because I think now we just, particularly the death of the high street, companies like Amazon and buying online and everything like that is only going to continue. And for that, you need a lot of packaging. And until we find out a way of doing it without lots of packaging, which I don't think is happening anytime soon, companies like Mondi are only going to excel on that. And actually, they do pay a dividend as well, which is quite a nice dividend. It's I mean, currently the stock trades for £19.50-ish, but they pay just shy of a euro cent. A share dividend over the year, so it's about a 5% dividend just under, because you've got to think of going back from euro to pounds. But I say it's not a bad little company to, I think, legislate against the new industries that we have now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, yeah, this whole the Amazon way of living, the death of the high street and all that stuff is only going to really, yeah, like you say, until we work out a different way to package up stuff, then you're going to need your cardboard and you're going to need your boxes. So yeah, I think you're right there.
I mean, that's one thing the internet can't get over, isn't it? It's just the physical, no matter what happens, you're going to have people in warehouses still, you're going to have delivery drivers, you're going to have things in boxes.
Yeah.
And I don't see that changing anytime soon. Even if it was delivered by a drone, it's still going to be in a box. So, I think I thought that was a good one for the medium term, and certainly something I'll be looking to add to my portfolio.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, do you want to do buy, hold, sell?
Yeah, okay. So this is now for the sort of more recent times, like short term, do you think? Or are you looking again for some medium term?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, maybe buy, hold, sell for the next 6 months. You know,
okay.
Given what we've said, and given the climate that we think, you know, okay, overall, we think things are opening up. There's more freedom. You know, the economy is going to get a boost, and normality or return to normality is going to be seen. What do we, if you would have to do a buy, hold, sell for the next 6 months, given that time frame, where would you be putting your money?
Okay. Do you want to go first or shall I?
Yeah, go on. I'll go first because, you know, if I have ever pick anything that you've picked, you'll never let me hear the end of it. So my buy would be Shell. I was torn between them and BP, but given that I think Shell, you know, Shell's been on a bit of a decline the last couple of months, and now it's just kind of turned a corner. BP was more at the bottom. And that's gone up over the last month. So I think there's some really good growth in Shell. I think they've shown good profits. I think, like I said, oil and stuff like that is only going to go up. And the dividends are really good. And they've announced a boost to their dividend over the next year. So my buy would be Shell. My hold would be Rolls-Royce. Like I said, the travel industry, although it's been very up and down, I'm actually down on where I bought, not massively, but you know, it's not in the blue at the moment. But I think give the travel industry time, we will see some growth. And yeah, that should be reflected in Rolls-Royce, who have a very strong affiliation to the travel industry, given the engines and all the stuff they do for kind of the Boeings and whatever, the planes. And then my sell is GSK. It's not like an immediate sell, but I'm not 100% certain that it's going to grow too much more than where it's at the moment. I bought it at the cheapest it's been for the last 6 years. So I've had some good growth out of it, about 8%, which is great. But I'm not too certain whether it will grow any more, specifically because of the split that they're going to be doing. And the chairman, the chairwoman, shall I say, has just been re-elected by a landslide. There is still uncertainty of her overall leadership. And I think that then reflects down to the share price. And that's why the share price has crept down and down and down over the last few years. and I'm not certain that it's going to move before that split. The split will either, you know, cause a big shift positively or negatively or whatever. But yeah, I think it's going to be a bit stagnant until that happens. So yeah, that's my buy hold sell.
Yeah, fair enough. I think I largely agree with you.
Makes a change.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some shares in GSK, and to be honest, it's one of my neglected stocks. I haven't really paid much attention to it at all. So it definitely made me think actually to have a look at that one, because as you say, it's we both bought a similar time, and it's sort of done okay. I had quite a large holding in it actually, and it's starting to get down to the point where it rose a little bit today, but overall in the last sort of month or so it has been very stagnant. And yeah.
It took a big leap when it turned out that you know, the private equity firm had a large shareholding in it. I think people saw that as a great new people have come in, they're going to turn GSK around, they're going to put it on the right track, and the split will be a good thing. So I think in that day it went up about 6%. It was huge. But then it's just tricking along, because I think investors are very wary of it. Then there is an uncertainty around the whole company. And if you look at sort of the vaccine side of things, you know, AstraZeneca and Pfizer and companies like that have done really well off the back of vaccines and stuff. GSK's done nothing. And we get to hear anything out of them. So,
They do pay quite a strong dividend though. So I might have a look at them. I might hold on to it a little bit and have a look, reassess after the next quarter's results, which I believe is due out soon. The dividends due up soon, and the quarterly results are due in July. So, and the AGM actually happened yesterday. So there'll be hopefully some results out of that coming soon. Cool. Well, my buy, hold, sell this week, my buy is going to be a company that I do struggle to pronounce, actually. They're called Spirax Sarco Engineering PLC. They are a company that involved in industrial engineering. Just basically, I think that when we come out of this, there's going to have to be a hell of a lot of industrial infrastructure going in. I mean, just think of all these, these guys particularly are in steam capabilities, and steam sounds like really archaic, you know, with coal and stuff. This is obviously with modern technology and stuff, and actually it's something that's quite renewable. So I just thought they've got some good ideas. The company's sort of done quite well over the past 5 years, and done particularly well over the last year. So, you know, I just thought it might be a good one. It is a very high costing share though. It's 120 quid a share, so it's quite a lot. They do pay a pretty decent a semi-decent dividend. It's about 2%, but for an engineering company that involves a hell of a lot of capital investment, you know, sort of moving forward in innovation and stuff, it's not too bad actually for the sector. And it does also seem to be like it's something that inevitably just keeps on climbing, so it's one to look at definitely. I'm having a look at it next time I put some money into my portfolio. My hold is going to be banks, basically, so high street banks. They are going through a lot of cost saving measures actually, in terms of that. I actually heard that Barclays are now cutting out their Indian call centers, which I thought was amazing. Why are they cutting out the cheapest labor they have? But it turns out what they're doing is the guys that are sat in your high street bank that are currently not able to work full capacity because COVID, you know, everything's always blamed on that. But they're actually turning them into, you know, whilst they're on their desks, they can answer the phone and deal with customer calls, you know, whilst they're doing things. So actually doubling up their workload. Wow. That's quite interesting. So, but yeah, they're all still pretty cheap. I mean, in terms of where they've been over the last 5 years, companies like NatWest, Lloyds, for instance, they're not where they could be. So I just think just have a punt on those. I think they all largely pay a dividend. Even NatWest, who's owned by the taxpayer, probably still it's 40% owned by the taxpayer, still pay a dividend. But obviously, as they get more and more money in, they'll be able to offload how much taxpayer owes on it, so whatever. So yeah, I think that's just a good one to look at as long term, really, and might be a bit of growth there, and hopefully a bit of dividend. In terms of my sell, it's Ocado. Ocado went through the roof for lockdown, and every time that there is an easement of lockdown, they lose a load of money, and every time there's an increase in lockdown measures, they gain a lot of money in terms of their share price. So for me, it's just a case of that as we head out, they'd definitely be on the slide back to what they'd deem as more normal trading, which I think would be about a good sort of quarter to 50% down from where they are now. So again, if you want to short it, I think that's a pretty good short. But yeah, Ocado definitely not one to buy at the moment.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with everything you've said.
Christ.
What is the, this must be a first. We're getting on really well. It's almost like we're friends.
I know exactly. Who is this person? I don't even know you. I'm on my throat.
Yeah, the banking one, I'll pick up on that just quickly to round off, but Lloyds is one that I've been banging on about for about a month now. And I wish I'd gone in earlier. I still think it's probably, if you get it the right side of 50p, I think it's pretty good. But yeah, I think that's one for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just a long term hold. Have a little buy. Don't go massive into it, and I think you just do okay with it. Just as a nice hedge maybe to some other riskier investments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, nice chatting to you, Jack, and we have got some guests lined up hopefully the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. Also, thank you to all the new listeners we've got in the pod the last couple of weeks. We've gained some extra countries now, to covering 10 different countries around the world, which I think is pretty amazing, really, considering we're just two blokes who decided to record a podcast for a laugh.
It's crazy. And on the subject of guests, I think, we say guests, they're literally our friends, and they're just people that, we know, and I think just going to give real world experience and insight and advice. And I think it's the real world experience that I think people value the most, because like we've said before, investing and that, it just seems like a different world to people, but we're just trying to basically come at it from a normal person's perspective. And yeah, it's always good to kind of listen and talk to other people as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and this is what the pod's all about, just having a chat and just being in it together. We're not experts, we're just people trying to earn a little penny and try and retire early. It's the dream, isn't it? So yeah, just again, thank you for joining in on that, and hope you are enjoying it. And don't forget to get in touch with us on our Instagram's our main social media. If you search Stock Club Pod with on Instagram, we do need to get some content up on that, but we will do it shortly.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thank you very much, and see you again soon.
Cool. Speak soon.